Okay, yeah. Rub those up.
No microphone, everybody. So. Okay, shalom. What I'd like to discuss in the short time that we have is, I'll try to do it very shortly, the way of dealing with biblical criticism. One of the most challenging things that we have in Tanakh studying is the relationship between a religious attitude and approach to Limud Tanakh as opposed to biblical criticism. What are our response to the biblical criticism, and what can we learn also from biblical criticism? So I'll try to speak about one of the basic ideas of biblical criticism, which we call the documentary hypothesis, and to see, to start, at least to give some ideas of how religious people or religious attitude can deal with the documentary hypothesis and to learn from it. I'll start with a few words as a background. What exactly is the documentary hypothesis? In the Torah, we find, and this is something that is very famous, that there are a lot of contradictions and duplications in the Torah. There are some of the famous examples, like the relationship between the first chapters of Sefer Bereshit. In the first perek of Bereshit, we read about the creation. At first, Hashem created the plants and the trees, and then the animals, and only in the last day, Hashem created Adam and his wife together. While in the second chapter of Bereshit, it is in the opposite order. First, Hashem created men, and then the plants, and then the animals, and only the last thing was created the man's wife, Chava. This is a very famous example. So we can give dozens of examples here. We don't have much time. Like for just another example, one or two. Where was Abraham when Hashem told him to go to Eretz Canaan? In the end of Parashat Noach, it says that Terach, his father, started going to Eretz Israel and he came into Haran. But in the beginning of Parashat Lech Lecha, it says that Hashem told Abraham to go from his land, and later on it says explicitly, I am the Lord who took you out of Ur Kasdim. Another example, who's this idea was to send spies to Eretz Israel before entering to Eretz Israel. In Sefer Bamidbar, it says that Hashem told Moshe to send the spies, and in Sefer Dvarim, it says that Bnei Israel asked Moshe to send the spies, and so on and so on. So what do we do with all those contradictions? So what was usual in all the generations, commentators try to find a solution to each contradiction. What happened around 300 years ago, it started by a man, his name was Osterhout. He was the first one to discover that there is something systematic about these contradictions. For example, all the contradictions that we have in Sefer Bereshit, one of the story uses the name Hashem, and the other one uses the name Elohim. Like, for example, the example that we had before in Bereshit, the first chapter, it says Bereshit bara Elohim, vayomer Elohim, vayivra Elohim. And in the second chapter, it says Hashem Elohim, all the way long. And the two stories of Abraham. In one story, it says vayomer Hashem el Abraham, lech lecha, uses the name Hashem. In the other one, Elohim, and so on. So that's how the idea of the documentary hypothesis was first developed. And a few years later, a man, his name was Wallhausen, who's a German, was an anti-Semitic, and he was the first one who to claim that the Torah was written by an editor who took from four different sources. One of them, he named it the source E, using the name Elohim. The other one used the name Hashem. The other two, one of them is P, priest, talking about all the issues of the priests and the sacrifices. And the fourth one is D, stands for Deuteronomy. The whole book of Deuteronomy is also something different. The idea was that each book or each source represent a different author who had a different point of view towards the some of the stories and some of the ideas. Each one used a different name for Hashem, a different language. He saw things in a different way. And the editor, what he actually did was cut and paste. He took pieces from each source and put them together. And that's how the Torah is written. The Torah is it was taken from four different sources, that somebody took pieces from each source and put them together. And this is the explanation to all those contradictions and duplications that we have in Torah. This is very shortly the idea of the documentary hypothesis. So of course, by saying this, it means first of all that Torah was not written by a prophet, not by Moshe Rabbeinu, it was not given from Hashem. And now the question is how the religious world, what is the response of the religious world to these arguments of the documentary hypothesis? So I can speak about three different approaches to this matter. The first one, the most common one, was to ignore the whole idea. In most schools, Jewish religious school in the world, nobody ever heard about the words documentary hypothesis. Nobody heard of maybe heard that there is something that the name is biblical criticism, but what exactly are the claims, what are the questions, what are the difficulties, nobody actually learned. And that is, I think, until today, in most of the schools, in Shivot, all kinds of Tanakh programs, we don't usually learn about these subjects. And this is one way of dealing with the issue, by ignoring it. But it has, of course, some problems. The most important one is that when a religious student goes to the university anywhere around the world, and sometimes he learns the Bible, sometimes in other subjects, somehow he has been exposed to the biblical criticism and to the documentary hypothesis. And if he has no answer to these questions, so he finds himself, and I met a lot of students like this that found themselves for the first time in dealing with such a tesa that they don't know what to do. Maybe they heard that this is something that were made from by people who, by anti-Semitism and things like that, but when he gets to a problem and starts to learn what it is, it caused him a lot of troubles. So the second approach that was especially, we find it in Germany in the 19th century, was by some scholars like Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman or Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. They tried to deal with these questions and to say that there are no questions. Actually, we can give an explanation to each contradiction and each duplication and to try to understand why the Torah is written this way, but to try to say that there is no really difficulties in these stories, and we don't have to ignore the whole idea on one hand, but we have to say that they are wrong. All the assumptions are wrong, and there is no real difficulty, and we can explain every question and give an answer to any question. The problem in this approach is, I think there are two main problems in this approach. One is that this approach ignores what we said before, the systematic idea that we find in these contradictions. And the second problem is that even if we find an answer to each question, we still ask ourselves, or must ask ourselves, why did it happen? Why the Torah is full of contradictions and duplications that we need to find each time an explanation, why is it written this way? Couldn't the Torah be written in more simple way without those contradictions, without these difficulties that we have to find an answer to them? So that's why I want to speak about the third approach to this matter, developed by my teacher. His name was Rav Mordechai Breuer. Some of you may have heard about him. He was one of the most important Tanakh scholars in Israel. He won the Israeli Prize. And his approach was like this. The name is in Hebrew Shitat Abchinot. English translation is probably the aspects approach. And I'd like to explain what exactly is the aspects approach. The idea is like this. We don't have to argue with biblical criticism about the fact that there are contradictions and duplications in the Torah. If we read the Torah honestly, we will say that there are duplications and contradictions. But the question is, what is the explanation of this phenomenon? And by saying that we can accept the idea that there are contradictions in the Torah, but to give this phenomena another explanation, this is the right way to be. On one hand, not to try to say strange answers that we don't fully can accept them, and on one hand. On the other hand, this approach leads us to a new understanding of the Torah, which is very interesting, and this is what I'll try to demonstrate now. The explanation is that the Torah was written in order to give us the different aspects of each issue. And every story, we can look at it from two or three or more sides. There are more than one side to look at the story. And the Torah wanted us to learn that there are a few different approaches, or there are two different points of view. And by writing all those points of view, this is the only way that we get the full picture of what really happened or what Hashem wants from us. So I'll give an example as long as we'll have time. We'll start for an example for our parasha that we read this Shabbat. I'll start with a question. How did Abraham and Sarah know that they're going to have a child within a year? So what is the answer? How did they know? Who told them? When? How? When did Hashem tell them, the Abraham and Sarah, that they will have a child? In the story of Abraham and the three Malachim, right? This is the common answer that I always get when I ask this question. But this is not the only answer to this question. This is the answer if we read our parasha, Parashat Vayera, in Bereshit chapter 18. But this is the second time in the Torah that Abraham got this tiding. The first time was in the end of Parashat Lech Lecha in chapter 17. I'll read the psukim here in source number 1. In chapter 17, I'll read the Hebrew text, and there is the translation down there. Vayomer Elohim el Abraham, Sarai ishtecha, lo tikra et shma Sarai ki Sarah shma, uverachti ota vegam natati mimena lecha ben, uverachtia vaita legoyim, malchei ami mimena yu. Vayipol Abraham al pana vayitzchak, vayomer belibo, haleben mea shana yivaled, ואם שרה הבת 90 שנה תלד, ויאמר אברהם אל האלוהים, לו ישמעאל יחיה לפניך. ויאמר אלוהים, אבל שרה אשתך יולדת לך בן, וקראת את שמו יצחק, והקימותי את בריתי איתו לברית עולם לזרוע אחריו, ואת בריתי אקים את יצחק, אשר תלך שרה למועד הזה בשנה אחרת, ויכל לדבר איתו, ויעל אלוהים מעל אברהם. This is the story that is written in chapter 17. In chapter 18, it's a little bit more famous story, we read quite the same idea, the same story of וירא אליו השם באלוני ממרא, והוא יושב פתח האוהל כחום היום, and then he saw the three malachim, the three angels ניצבים עליו, and we'll jump to פסוק ט', ויאמרו אליו, איה שרה אשתך, ויאמר הנה באוהל, ויאמר שוב ושוב עליך כעת חיה, והנה בן לשרה אשתך, ושרה שומעת פתח האוהל והוא אחריו, ואברהם ושרה זקנים באים בימים, חדה להיות לשרה אורח כנשים, ותצחק שרה בקרבה למור, אחרי בלותי הייתה לי עדנה ואדוני זקן, ויאמר אדוני אל אברהם, למה זה צחקה שרה למור, האף אמנם אלד ואני זקנתי, היפלא מאדוני דבר, למועד אשוב אליך כעת חיה ולשרה בן. So what do we see here? We have two stories that tell us the same ideas. In both stories, Hashem told Abraham that within a year, his wife will have a child. In both stories, the parent who heard this tiding laughed. In both stories, Hashem criticized the parent and he said, why do you laugh? Okay, is it too difficult for Hashem to give you a child? And in both stories, it says that at the end of the story, Hashem, when Hashem finished telling him this, so Hashem kind of went away from Abraham. So why do we need these two stories in the Tanakh?
Hashem criticized Abraham in the first story.
Saying in verse 19, Aval Sarah ishtecha yoledet lecha ben. Aval means nevertheless, but Sarah.
It's not the same direction.
It's not exactly the same, but it's still responded, oh, don't you believe that Hashem, that Sarah will wife bear a child? Okay. So, we also can see that in the first story, the Torah uses the name Elohim few times, right? In the second story, the Torah uses the name Hashem. So according to the documentary hypothesis, the answer is simply, the editor took one story from source E, the first one, and the second source from second story from source J, he put them together, and that's the only reason why we have twice the same story. But now, we'll try to see that when we look and we read carefully those two stories, we see that even though there are some similarities between the stories, but the basic point of each story is different. And let's see now what is the basic point in each story. In the story, first we'll note about one interesting difference between the stories. In the first story, God tells three times Abraham that Sarah will have a child, but she will bear a child to Abraham. In first, it says in verse 16, "Vegam natati mimena lecha ben." I will give you a son through her. You will be the parent. Once again, in verse 19. אבל שרה אשתך יולדת לך בן. But Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son. And in the third time, in verse 21, את בריתי אקים את יצחק אשר תלד לך שרה, but my covenant I will establish with יצחק whom Sarah will bear to you. Three times it says that Sarah will bear to Abraham the son. On the other hand, in the story in chapter 18, it's different. It says twice in verse 10, שוב ושוב עליך כעת חיה, והנה בן לשרה אשתך, I'll return to you at this set time next year, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son. And also in verse 14, ויפלא השם דבר, למועד אשוב אליך כעת חיה, ולשרה בן, and Sarah will have a son. So there is a difference. Who's going to have the son, Abraham or Sarah? What is the meaning of this difference? I think the most important point is that those two stories gives us two answers to the question why Yitzchak was supposed to be born to Abraham and Sarah. In the first story, there is a reason, there is a destination for all this. Hashem tells Abraham more than once that this son will be the father of the chosen nation. Hashem tells Abraham in verse 19, Aval Sarah ishtecha yoledet lecha ben, and you shall call his name Yitzchak, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. And again, Hashem says to Abraham, he will be the father of the nation that will inherit Eretz Israel and will be the father of my nation. And that's why in this story Hashem tells Abraham that Sarah will bear you a son, because the son will be born to you. I selected you out of all the people in the world, and your son through Sarah, he will be your son, and he will continue your offspring, and he will be the father of the nation of your offspring. In the second story, in Bereshit, there's no such a thing at all. The only thing that is being said about the son, that he will have a son. Within a year, Sarah will have a son, like every other story in the world, that the woman, she is the one who gives birth, not to someone, but she is giving birth to for herself. And especially the explanation for why Abraham and Sarah will have a son is, of course, as a result of what happened in the beginning of the story. Why are two old people suddenly had a son? Because it's a kind of a reward to the gracious hospitality of Abraham and Sarah that the Torah describes in details in the beginning of the chapter. So we look at the idea that the son will be born to Abraham and Sarah because of their chesed, because they are righteous people, and exactly like the story in the Haftarah, where the Isha Shunamit also welcomed Elisha, and Elisha promised her a son as a reward for her chesed. So we have two different points of view at the question, why did Abraham and Sarah had a child? His name is Yitzchak. According to the first story, the idea is that he is the one who will be the father of the chosen nation. The second answer is we can learn that if people behave like Abraham and Sarah, and they are good people with chesed, with achnasat orchim, with this hospitality that they have, they deserve a reward from Hashem, and they deserve to have a son that will continue their way, as it's written later on, "V'leman asher etzaved bana v'shamu derech Hashem la'asot tzedakah." He will also educate his children to keep the way of Hashem by doing charity and justice. So, in the first story, as we said before, we use the name Elohim. In the second story, we use the name Hashem. But if we turn the page, we'll see in source number 2 that finally, when the child was born, the Torah describes twice, in two different psukim, the birth of Yitzchak. In the first verse, in Pasuk Aleph, it says, "V'Hashem, Hashem, pakad et Sarah, kasher amar." Which of the stories use the name Hashem? The second one. In the second one, who will be the father, the parent of the child? Sarah. So that's why when it mentions that Hashem pakad et Sarah, remembered Sarah, as he said, "Vayas Hashem leSarah kasher diber." So, and the Lord did so to Sarah. Because in the story that used the name Hashem, the focus is on Sarah. But then in Pasuk Bet it says, "Vatahar vateled Sarah leAvraham." Sarah, she conceived and bore Abraham a son, and we know exactly what will be later in the Pasuk. "Lamoed asher diber ito hu Elohim." Not Hashem, because the story that tells us that the Sarah will bear to Abraham the son uses the name Elohim. Okay, so this is a simple example, and that we now the question is, What makes more sense? To say that there was an editor who made, as we said before, cut and paste. He had two stories, and he first took the one with Elohim, and then the one with Hashem. And then when he came to Perek Afalef, he cut one pasuk from here and one pasuk from there. It's a very interesting way of working. Or to say that this is the way of the Torah to describe the idea that there are at least two points of view about the birth of Yitzchak, and that's how the Torah was written, to give us the full picture of the whole story. So I can say that to me it makes more sense that there was no such a clever editor that we don't know who he was and how he someday gave all the nation the Torah, Bnei Israel, and everybody accepted it as it is. But never mind, what is more important is to say that this is the way of the Torah. We don't have to say that there are no contradictions or there is no duplication here. What the only thing we have to do is to explain why. And if we don't argue about facts, but about explanations, okay, we can talk about explanation. To one who believes in God, it's much easier to accept the aspects approach. And to one who doesn't believe in God, it makes more sense to believe in the aspects approach. But this is a question of belief or not belief. It's not questioning of what are the facts. So what I always tell the students, especially those who come from university and have questions, I always tell them this. Try to make the line between facts and explanations. There are contradictions in the text. There are facts. Explanation? Okay, we can give a lot of explanations, and for everyone, his explanation will be as for his goes away with his beliefs and other things. But when we learn the Tanakh this way, I believe it's not only that we have an answer to an apologetic way to answer the question of the biblical criticism, but we definitely understand the Torah much more in much deeper and interesting way. I have only 3 minutes to give another small example, very simple. Then I will have questions and answers, okay? So I want to focus on one little example that is much more well known, I believe. And this is the difference between the section about the Shabbat in Aseret HaDibrot, one in Sefer Shmot and the other one in Sefer Dvarim. We sing every Shabbat the song Elcha Dodi, and we say Zachor v'Shamor b'Dibur Echad. What does it mean, Zachor v'Shamor b'Dibur Echad? It means exactly the aspects approach. What does it mean? The question is, what did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai about the Shabbat? In Sefer Shmot, it says that Hashem told Moshe, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat Lekadsho. Once again, I read the Hebrew text, and there is the translation down there. Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod V'asita Kol Melachtecha. ביום השביעי שבת לאדוני אלוהיך לא תעשה כל מלאכה אתה ובנך וביתך עבדך ועמדך ובהמתך וגרך אשר בשעריך כי ששת ימים עשה אדוני את השמיים ואת הארץ ותיים את כל השבים ואנך ביום השביעי על כן ברך אדוני את יום השבת ויקדשו. So first it says זכור את יום השבת, and the whole concept of the Shabbat is a day that you should remember. What you should remember in Shabbat? Remember that the Hashem created the world in 6 days, and he rested on the seventh day. That's the idea of Shabbat, as a day that we can remember Briyat HaOlam, remember the creation. On the other hand, in Sefer Dvarim, it says not Zachor, but Shamor. And by saying Shamor, is not only a different word, but a different concept of the Shabbat. Why should we observe the Shabbat? As it says here, Shabbat, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat Lekadsho, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod Vasit Kol Melachtecha, Vayom HaShviyi Shabbat La'Adonai Elohecha, Lo Ta'aseh Kol Melacha, Ata Ubincha Ubitecha Vavdecha Vamadcha Veshorcha Vechamorcha Vechol Behemtecha Vegelcha Asher Bisharecha. Why? למען ינוח עבדך ועמתך כמוך, in order that your slave and your maid servant may rest like you. The Shabbat is a day that it's forbidden for you to work because we want that your slaves will have a day off. And if you won't have a Shabbat, so they also they won't have a Shabbat. So in order that they can rest, so you must not work in Shabbat. And you should remember also, here is also saying something about remember, but not remembering the creation, but remembering v'zacharta ki eved hayita v'eretz Mitzrayim. Why I order you to do things for your slaves, you have to remember that you yourself, once in your history, you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Hashem took you out from there, b'zbeyad chazaka u'b'zonetuya, al ken tzivcha Hashem elokecha la'asot et yom ha-shabbat. So one can say there is a contradiction. What did Hashem tell Abraham? He told Moshe. He told him Zachor, and the concept of Shabbat is to remember the creation, or he told him Shamor, and the whole idea is to help the slaves to rest. So according to what we have said, there is no problem with this contradiction, because Zachor and Shamor, as Chazal say, Bedibur echad ne'emru. Both are right, there are two different aspects of the Shabbat. One of them is written in Sefer Shmot, one of them is written in Sefer Dvarim. By saying Zachor v'Shamor b'dibur echad, Chazal told us we are not afraid of contradictions. Contradictions are part of the reality. The reality is most of the time is complicated, and they have more than one way of looking at things. So the whole idea is that by saying Dibur Echad, it means both are right. And this is probably the basic answer to all this, to all the documentary hypothesis. If we see a contradiction, we actually don't have to run away and to say this represent two different authors and two different approaches. Two different approaches, yes, but two different aspects of the same writer who wrote the Torah this way in order to let us understand and the full picture of all subjects that we've been discussing the Torah. This is the basic idea. I hope it was understood. And now if you have questions, I'm happy to hear. Yeah, sir.
The two examples you gave, to me, one problem, the second example you gave, talking about the Shittat HaPchinot, about the different aspects. That, the way you explained it, that's understandable because of what you said. But first, to protect the devil's advocate, you don't have to be the devil's advocate when it's in the Kategor. You talk about the E code and the J code.
Yeah.
So you said that the first example is Elohim and the second part is Shem. But the two examples you gave, if the author was going to cut and paste. He's taken the E from here and put the E with that, and the J from there, J from that. So you haven't resolved anything. I mean, you're saying you've continued, if you're taking the two different sources, you've continued one source to the other. So you haven't really sort of answered or resolved it in any way.
In other words, you didn't show inconsistent contradictions. You've simply shown your examples in a way are easy.
It's consistent.
Because they show just an amplification, an additional perspective. That's not necessarily a contradiction. But if you have an example of a contradiction, let's say the two stories of creation.
Right.
How do you reconcile it if they in fact completely, they seem to be mutually exclusive?
Yeah,
These two examples don't seem mutually exclusive.
It can be because it is, I'll answer the question. Regarding the first story of Bereshit, the creation, two descriptions of the creation. Each story has its own message about man's place in the world. If he is in the center of the world, like it appears in the second story, or if he is only the last thing that was created, as it's written in Perek Aleph. So what exactly happened? This is the question. So what the Abroyer used to say, that all the answer that we're giving about the question what happened in reality, you can still give all the answer. This is not the question. Because the most important question is not what happened, but what is the message. So whatever used to be an answer to this question, like saying that in Perek Aleph the plants grew until the line of the ground, and then after the man was born, they grew up from the ground. So This answer was given by many commentators, by the Midrash and Chazal many years ago. You can still use these answers, but now you understand what is the meaning of the simple contradiction. You can give an answer to each question, but this doesn't answer the question, why is it written this way? Now we know what is it written this way. Each story, by telling it this way, has its own message. Still, we have to answer a question that for the simple text of the Torah was not that important. What exactly happened in reality? So give an answer. What exactly happened in reality? This is not. This is really doesn't bother me. What was created before, man or plants? The idea is what important to us, not the question. What exactly happened? We can look at the commentators and try to find solution to this question. But according to this approach, the answer is that first we have to learn the lesson. This is what important. What happened in reality doesn't make a lot of difference to me what was created.
We're trying to be so literal in our understanding, and then we de-emphasize it and say the literal factual analysis doesn't really matter?
Because this is how, this is the message of the Torah. If there is a contradiction, there is a contradiction. We can't argue with the question that there is a contradiction between Perek Aleph and Perek Bet. By reading the Torah without any opinions before, right?
Yeah.
So, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the message. The message, the contradiction is the message. If the answer was the message, so the answer was written there. By saying that the contradiction is the message and the idea, it's not a question, simple question, what happened before. What is the idea by telling us that man was created in the end? Or, in the other hand, what is the idea of man were created in the first? This is the message, and this is what is important. You can't say that the importance is somewhere else out of the text. If the text doesn't give us the answer, it means that it's not important, it's so important. I believe it's important. I believe that this is what the Midrash tried to say by solving these all kinds of questions. And in any story, you can find the message. And life is, as we said before, life is complicated. And sometimes in life, we find ourselves in a contradiction. And we don't say that the contradiction is one thing, one side is true and the other is not true. We say that in each side, they have some truth.
So you're suggesting we should approach the Torah rather than a book of historical fact, a book of messages and lessons?
Yes, when the analyzing of the Torah leads us to this conclusion. Like I'm not saying that, for example, that Akedat Yitzchak didn't happen because the only thing that matters is the idea. But Akedat Yitzchak, there is no story that contradicts the story. But when we have, like here, two different stories that's small in the creation, so here we say the message of the Torah, by learning the Torah, not by saying from our own mind. The Torah, it wasn't important for the Torah to tell us exactly what happened in reality, what was created first.
So by stating it in these two ways and giving us these two aspects,
yeah,
saying the Torah is saying to us,
yeah,
don't worry about the details,
right,
take the message.
In this story.
In that particular story.
Yes. Yes?
I remember Professor Lipovich used to say the Torah is not a science book. If you want to go learn science, go to a science book. So he used to say, what is the first possible operation about? So he used to teach us there's a Boira and there's a Bria, and they're not the same. To exclude pantheistic philosophies. And he said, this is the message of the Torah. Torah's not a science book. If you want to learn about science, go and find a science book.
So why say, he used to
answer
so why say what
people
they
have always hung up on science
theory
questions,
why
looking in Bereshis for scientific answers of the world's development and all of this. It's just not science.
Then why mention the order at all?
But he said there's a message.
He could have said the world was created.
No, there are very interesting messages.
All these things,
but there are messages in it. There are messages for where man behaves, where belief system. This
Rav Soloveitchik wrote a very interesting article about the two different descriptions in Sefer Bereshit. His name is Isha Emunah Abodet, the lonely man of faith. So he, I didn't want to say that would have taken us a lot of time, but if you want an answer to the question why the Torah wrote these two descriptions, so his article gives us a beautiful explanation, what is the message of each story, and as he says there is no contradiction between the stories, the messages, but the details in the way you describe, so it can have some contradictions. It's like reading about something that happened in different newspapers. If you read something that happened in Israel, if you read a newspaper in, I don't know what, in Australia, but if you read two different newspapers in Israel from two sides of the political map, so you ask yourself, what happened? Is it a contradiction? But the truth is, each one emphasizes his own point of view by selecting the points he wants to select in order to deliver his message. That's in a much higher level, but that's the basic point here also. Yes?
So has anyone done the analysis then to understand if, in the instances where they only explained it once, or it was only written once, not a contradiction, it hadn't set us up, we learnt the message from it.
Right.
And in the situations where there is a contradiction and it was done twice and we're learning two messages, so has anyone done the analysis to say, well, are there really in fact two things that we've learned from this, two different things that we've learned that justifies the contradiction?
Yes. We must always find the explanations for the contradictions. But
why have the contradiction?
Why have the contradiction in the first place? The only reason to have the contradiction would be to teach us two things as
right.
opposed to writing it once, mm-hmm. and therefore no contradiction. So the question is, if you've written it twice, then there must be two things separately to learn that you couldn't learn out of one.
Right. And
so that has been done.
By writing, lemashal, zachor veshamor, if it was mixed together, that's why what you asked, why wasn't it mixed together? I think that we learn the story in much better way if we have each story for itself and to try to understand the messages, like in Perek Aleph and Perek Bet in Bereshit. It's also, if it was, it was written as one story, I'm sure we would have missed the idea of the two different aspects. The two aspects can be shown only in this matter, like each message for itself totally in one story. I think the whole idea of the two different focus of the Shabbat, as we said, is from here we can learn it in a much clearer way.
Just looking at the Bereshit one with the birth of such a comment, chapter 17 deals afterwards of the Brit, after the Brit, but
right.
And whenever I read this, it seems to me that he's telling Abraham, you're going to have an heir.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's like telling, I give an example, the royal family, you know, there's going to be an heir to the throne. That would be a very different message to saying to Catherine, you're having a baby. And I think to Sarah, the second one, they're just saying, you're having a baby after mm-hmm. all this time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joy. You're going to be a mum.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the messages here are very different to somebody, to Abraham, saying, this is going to be the heir. This is what you're going to call
right.
him. This
mm-hmm.
is why you have this. As to the mum, who's just saying, it's not just an heir, this is your baby.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's a true message that I've always thought about, why there was this sort of duality of the text.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rav Bazak. On behalf of JBD, Mizrahi, I want to thank Mizrahi, of course, our president is here, Ian, and Michal from the Midrasha as well, and the partners of ABL, Michael's with us. Thank you, Rav Bazak, for the interesting talk. Look at the attendance. It shows you there's a thirst for this type of stuff, which I don't have to tell David because he understands that. And shkoach to David for everything he's doing. There's a lot of good stuff going on, apart from just mincha, talks and lunch, and maybe we should be doing more of this, and hopefully if Ian expands his scholar in residence program and other organizations do as well to bring more speakers to Australia, I think Michael will be happy to continue to host events like this and have even more people to come along. Some of our best and brightest boys actually go to the yeshiva where Rav Bazak is teaching each year on there. We're a year away from Australia and Israel, and I think they're in interesting hands because they're not being given an entirely conventional approach to Limudei HaKodesh. You can see from Rav Bazak today that there are different perspectives and they're not, it's not all necessarily the old traditional approach, and frankly, even though I couldn't reconcile every contradiction you were mentioning today. I'm very happy that our boys and our girls are exposed to that. Because you're right, they come back and they've learnt only one thing all their lives and someone confronts them with something they've never thought of. And the real risk isn't that they just get frustrated, but that they walk away from everything that they grew up with because they can't reconcile the contradictions. or at least find a way for it to be meaningful to them, or find a way to try and learn and understand better as their life goes on. So, Yisha Koach, Rav Bazak, thank you everybody for coming. And in the traditional manner, we're going to have mincha.
Benching
first, sorry, yes, and then mincha. There are some people have yard side today also, so I think we'll have a whiskey for the hardcore here on the left.